We begin the current daf and set the school in daf here, Dalet. We begin on the top of the Yomim, where the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of this parak, this Masechta, regarding the laws of Shechita, of slaughtering, specifically regarding different variant cases of when someone slaughters and that still the Shechita is going to be kosher or not. It says the Mishnah, Shechit b'Shabbos or b'Yom Kippur. If someone slaughters on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, which there's a punishment of Karis, which one dies at a young age if he does that, because one is forbidden to do that malacha on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Says the Mishnah, Ava Bisham is Chayv Benafsha, even if he's liable for his life, he's liable to die because of what he did, but Shechita Sikshera, ultimately, at the end of the day, it was a valid Shechita, and therefore, that food is permitted, it's going to be kosher. On that, says the Gemara, Amar Avuhun, he says, Darish Chia Barav Meshmet Rav, Chia Barav said the name of Rav, that, however, Asura Ba'achila, that meat is forbidden to be eaten because of that it was slaughtered on Shabbos, L'yema, for that day. So even though he's not going to cook it, which would be another violation of malacha, of productive activity on Shabbos and Kippurim, he rather is going to eat it raw, even that he's not allowed to, since it was slaughtered on Shabbos or Yom Kippur. That was Rav's teaching. Now, v'nasvin chavrai l'meimer, the b'nei yeshiva, the students, they entered their mind to say that this Tana of our Mishnah that Rav was explaining, that the halacha would be that it would be forbidden to be eaten on that day, is because Rav held that the Tana of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. It's going like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the Gemara later on, the next daf is going to tell us that where did he see over here in the halacha of the Mishnah that's forbidden to be eaten on that day, is because the Mishnah, the Tana, compares the case of Shabbos to Yom Kippur. Now, obviously, just like Yom Kippur, one can never eat on that day because it's a fast day. So too, the Tana of the Mishnah is trying to tell us that Shabbos is going to have the same halacha where that, although it's slaughtered now and it's kosher meat, one cannot eat it on this day. So that's going to, as we'll explain later on, is obvious that the Tana is telling us. And that Rav tells us that this halacha that the Tana is telling us that you can't eat it that day, so the students thought to say that that's Rabbi Yehuda. So says the Gemara, Hi Rabbi Yehuda, which teaching of Rabbi Yehuda was it that Rav heard and understood this idea that it's forbidden to eat that day, and that's what's being inferred in this Mishnah, that Shabbos is like Yom Kippur, that although it's slaughtered and it's kosher meat, now it cannot be eaten on this day. So Amar Baba says, Rabbi Yehuda dachanahi. It's Rabbi Yehuda that refers to the halacha of things being prepared or not before Shabbos, which is just not like when the Mishnah says the Shabbos. Mishnah says, Mechatchen es hadiluin. A person could cut the gourds, these types of vegetables that are detached from the ground, lefnei behema, for in front of the animals, so the animals could eat it. So too vesa nevela, that even an animal that died on Shabbos, that's a dead animal carcass right now, the homeowner could cut up the pieces of the meat, lefnei klav, in front of the dogs, that they could eat it. That's the Tana Kama. Yehudaime says no. Im lohoysa nevela me'erv Shabbos, if this animal was not dead from before Shabbos, Asura, it's forbidden to go out now and be busy with this meat and cut it up and do all these types of procedures for the animals to eat it. Lefisha einam min hamuchen, because it's not something that was prepared yesterday before Shabbos started. It wasn't fit at that point for dogs to eat it because it was a living animal. And that's something that the animal had a different utility for whatever it is. Maybe humans would eat it, maybe would do some other work with it, but it wasn't prepared for dogs to eat it. Only when it's dead, what do you do it in the veil? You throw it to the dogs. So therefore, such a Yehuda, if it died today on Shabbos, you can't go ahead and it's muktzah. You can't go ahead and be busy with this thing and cut it up and give it to the dogs. Says the Gemara. Says Rababa, Amma. So you see, kibin deli itchem me'etmol. Since it wasn't prepared from yesterday, because it wasn't designated for this utility on Shabbos, so asura. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says forbidden to do things with it. So hach over here in the halacha of our Mishnah Nami is the same thing. Since it wasn't prepared from yesterday. Yesterday, this animal wasn't designated for this thing, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain, because yesterday it was still alive. An animal that's alive is meant for, additionally, for to have children. It wasn't meant just to be eaten by a person. So therefore, asura. So therefore, it's forbidden because of muktzah, which literally the word muktzah means to say set aside, but means to say when something was set aside not for Shabbos purposes, because it wasn't set aside for Shabbos purposes, and muktzah is forbidden rabbinically for someone to eat it, because it's muktzah. One cannot move things like that, one cannot eat things like that. So therefore, says Rababa, it was that Rabbi Yehuda that we understood, if you're slaughtering on Shabbos, this thing was not designated for human consumption when Shabbos started, because the animal's still alive. Now, a person violated Shabbos and slaughtered, fine, it's kosher, but it's muktzah, and therefore it cannot be eaten. That was the whole entire day of Shabbos, Yom Kippurim, that was Rabbi Yehuda that the students were referring to, that Rav's halachic teaching, inferring from a Mishnah, is referring to. However, Amalei Abaye, Abaye said to Rababa, he says, no, this cannot be that Rabbi Yehuda. Because me dummy, is this Mishnah and Shabbos that you're trying to compare, is it comparable to the halacha of our Mishnah? No. Hasam, over there in that halacha Mishnah Masechta Shabbos, Meikara Muchan La'adam. Originally, it was fit for human consumption. Now, Hashta, now that it became a nevela, on Shabbos, it died, Muchan La'klavim. It's prepared for dogs. So it's two totally different things. It was never prepared for what it is that you want to use it for now. That's called Muktzah on Shabbos, set aside. However, Hacha, over here in the halacha of our Mishnah, Mikar Muchan La'adam. Before, when it was alive, it was prepared and designated for humans. Vashta Muchan La'adam. Now it's also prepared for humans. So how could you compare the halachas? Why should our halacha of our Mishnah be a halacha of lacking in achana, of being Muktzah, when it never changed any utility? It's just what it was beforehand, when it was alive, and now when it's slaughtered. So, says the Gemara, Rabba answers, he says, Mi safed behemah b'chayel achila medes? He says, what do you mean? How can you say it's the same thing? You think when the animal's alive, it's designated for eating? No, behemah b'chayel l'gadolei medes. When the animal's alive, it's there to have children. It's a living human, it's a living being, which is there to proliferate and have children. So therefore, it's not the same thing. And therefore, it is changing. And therefore, it is the same thing as Allah in the Mishnah Masechta Shabbos. And therefore, that's why they understood that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, who says it's going to be forbidden on the whole day of Shabbos because of Muktzah. And that asked Abaye back, but if that's the case, then behemel Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, any animal, beyamtiv, on yamtiv, hechashachtinan. How could you slaughter any animals on yamtiv, but it's Muktzah? Because you're saying, before yamtiv, and yamtiv has the laws of Muktzah too, just that you could do certain malachas, but if it's Muktzah, it's Muktzah, and you can't touch it, you can't do things with it. So how could you go ahead and slaughter? Erev yamtiv, it was to have children. Now, in Yom Tov, you want to go slaughter it, you can't touch it. You want to go now make it for consumption purposes, that's two different things. And you're saying, if you hold that, that would be considered Muktzah. How could you ever slaughter animals in Yom Tov, which we know we could? So, Amalai, so Rebbe said to him, no. I medis l'achila v'oy medis l'gadol. An animal is prepared when it's alive for two things. For eating purposes, which that's what we might end up doing with the animal, and to have children. Nishchata, when it is slaughtered, huvra de l'achila medes, then it's verified, then it's clarified that it was there, we know now retroactively, that it was there for consumption purposes. And therefore, when you slaughter an animal on Yom Tov according to Yehuda, it's not muktzah, because we're showing that obviously it was prepared for eating. Loi nishchata, if it's not slaughtered, like over here in the case that we're discussing in our Mishnah, where it wasn't slaughtered yesterday, and obviously we're assuming that it was not left to be slaughtered on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to slaughter on Shabbos. So therefore, huvera, then it's verified when Shabbos starts, that it's not on this Shabbos it's not being left for human consumption, but rather to have children, and that's why it's going to be muktzah. But that's why in Yom Tov you could slaughter, because it's verified then it was for consumption purposes. So since it could be verified based on the halachic principle of Abreira, therefore it's not a difficulty why it could be like a Yehuda and that it is considered Muktzah, because yesterday was for having children and now you want to make it into consumption, that's Muktzah. But in Yom Tov that's not a problem, because then it's retroactively verified that it was for consumption purposes. On that aspect, Abaya, but v'hol lesle, Rabbi Yehuda Breger, you can't say the answer you're saying. Because Rabbi Yehuda does not hold to this halachic principle of retroactive clarification. And that is, if an animal, when it's alive, it is specifically and exclusively for eating purposes, so then asks Abaya, when you go ahead and you slaughter it on Yom Tov, how is it permitted? Maybe yesterday it was to have children. Because, as we're going to prove now, he doesn't hold of Breger. Rather, obviously, from the fact that we don't say it's forbidden, even according to Yehuda, to slaughter animals on Yom Tov, obviously it's because generally we do assume that an animal is for consumption purposes. And therefore, we're really going back to the question we had asked before, that even if we have that according to Yehuda, that yes, as we bring in Mishnah Masechta Shabbos, that an animal that became in the veil on Shabbos is forbidden to go ahead and use it for the dogs, that you could say because someone that's slaughtering on Shabbos, you could still say someone slaughters on Shabbos, it's going to be permitted for that day, because there's a fundamental difference between the cases. Over there, when we came in the veil on Shabbos, yes, originally it was fit for human consumption. Now it's fit for the dogs. But here, where originally it was fit for humans, so it's still fit for humans. And then we're back to the question, says Abaya, that you don't find a source in Rabbi Yehuda that's saying the halach of a Mishnah, because as we're going to prove right now, we're stuck in the how could it be Rabbi Yehuda, who you want to say that if it's meant for children the animals, and now you're saying that for consumption, that that's considered a problem of mamukta, then how, according to Rabbi Yehuda, would you be able to go ahead and slaughter on Yom Tov, which we obviously know that you do, and you can't say, tell me because it's retroactively clarified, because as the Gemara says, minolan, from where do we know that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold halacha brera? Says the Gemara, if you think it's from the following braisa, which says, someone purchases wine from amongst the Kuthim, which the Kuthim were a group of people that were brought by the Assyrian king to take the place of the 10 tribes of the Jewish people that were exiled. Now, this braisa is coming to tell us that Kuthim had a unique halacha that they were suspect even regarding if they were taking off truma on their produce. In contrast, let's say, to regular amaratzim ignoramuses of the Jewish people, where if someone buys from an amaratz, he doesn't have to separate Truma Gedoyla. As the Mishnah teaches, Masech Desayit of Memchesim and Aleph, Yechon HaKangod had sent out and scattered around the whole boundary of Eretz Yisrael. And they saw that the only thing that people are separating were, in majority, were Truma Gedoyla. So we see that regarding Truma, they were not suspect. And that's what this Braisa is telling us, that, but the Kathim were suspect even regarding Truma, because as one of the cases we're going to say right now, the person who buys from the Kathim has to separate even Truma elements. Which, as Rashi points out, this Mishnah, or is it a Braisa, is before the Rabbanu were geyser on their wine, that you can't even partake of it in the first place. So we're talking about that someone that does buy the wine from the Kathim. The only problem he has is it properly tithed? So we're assuming that he didn't take off anything. So Eimer, the one who buys from him has to say and verbalize, whereas Rashi points out, we're talking about a case where either he doesn't have any vessels to actually physically separate the Trumas and Maestras, or it's getting dark, it's right before Shabbos, and he wouldn't have time to separate it, so he could do a verbal expression. What he says is as follows. He says, Shnei lugin shani osid lahafresh, two lugin out of this 100 that I'm going to end up separating after Shabbos, because now I don't have time. Harehin truma, that's going to be the truma, meaning everything is still here in this jug of wine, this barrel of wine. But I'm going to end up separating, that should be the truma. Asar, which is generally the medium measurement of truma, is 1 out of 50. Asara, maiserishin, 1/10 of it should be the first tithe, which goes to the Levi. Tisha, maisersheni, the next tithe, which is now you're left with 90, which is 9 out of 90, which is 1/10, well, it should be the second tithe, which is what he takes up to Yerushalayim to eat. Now, moreover, says the Braisa, Mechel, then he has to actually deconsecrate that 9 of maisersheni on monies that he has in his house. Now, the reason for that is because since he could rectify it by saying that those words, that it should be deconsecrated, the money he has at home, which then the sages did not permit for him to drink it and then rely on this other concept of, as we'll see, brera, of retroactive clarification. Because in contrast, truma and the other maestras, which you cannot just deconsecrate, there the Tanna says you could rely on brera. And after Shabbos, when he will actually separate that 1/50th and that 1/10th, then we'll say that now it's verified that that was the truma part and what he had drank over Shabbos was only the chulin part. So when he does this, and then v'shayse miyad, he can immediately drink. That's the Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Yehuda, however, Rebbe Yesi, Rebbe Shimon, Eishun, they say it's forbidden to do what Rebbe Meir had suggested. So obviously, says Abaya, you see Rebbe Yehuda does not hold of the halacha of Breira. He says you can't do this, because you're drinking today, you're drinking Tevel, or you're drinking Truma, I don't know what you're drinking. You can't say that what you drank was Chulin, maybe what you drank was Truma, because obviously it doesn't hold of the halacha of Breira. So again, if he doesn't hold halacha brera, you can't give the answer that you gave to say and differentiate why Yom Tov is different than Shabbos when you're slaughtering and it's not muktzah because it's huver that it was for achila and not legadl, which on Shabbos you don't have that because you're not allowed to slaughter on Shabbos. Can't say that because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold halacha brera. However, the Gemara says we continue to Medbay is that actually that wouldn't be a good source for Abaya to refute the answer of Rabbah. Because Hasim over there, the reason is not because he doesn't hold a brera. Rather, because the Tani time, it's like the Braisa itself says the reason. Because the Braisa continues and says, Amalei the Remeir, they, including Rabbi Yehuda, responded to Remeir, who he said, you could do this, you could just say that what I will ultimately separate will be the Truma and Maises. They said to him, Iyatamayde, don't you agree? Shem Yibaka Hanoid, but maybe over Shabbos, let's say, the flask will burst. V'nimtza Shaisa Tvam L'mafrei, it's going to come out that he had drank untithed wine retroactively. Because we have to suspect that maybe the flask will burst and all that what's rest is going to go to waste. And it's going to come out that, yeah, it'll be retroactively clarified that he never ended up separating Trumas and Maestras. That means that what he drank up until then was Tevel, was untithed because he never ended up tithing it. So therefore, how could you go ahead and say to do this option? Where Amar Lahan, Rebbe Meir said to them, L'kashi baka. When it bursts, then we'll see, then we'll figure it out. In other words, he says you don't have to suspect that. But one thing you see is that the reason wasn't because you don't hold a brera. No, maybe they hold a brera. But the problem is you're going to have a brera of having drank Tevel if it ends up bursting. So El Rather says the Gemara, the proof of Abaye that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold on the halacha Breira is Minatani Ayye. It's from the following Braisa that Ayye, the name of a sage, had taught. Tani Ayye, Ayye taught a Braisa, where this is going as the Gemara in Erev and Dav Lamed Vav Beis says, that a person can make a stipulation regarding his Erev Techumen, which Erev Techumen allows a person, where a person has only 2,000 Amos beyond his area, whether it be his home, his body, or his city, 2,000 Amos beyond that, to go, and then beyond that, he can't walk on Shabbos. A person can make an Erev where he puts his food over there, and then that's considered his locus, his home, and then he can go 2,000 Amos further in that direction. So the Gemara there tells us that a person can make two Erevin, where essentially really you can only have one, but you can make two Erevin, one 2,000 Amos further from the east of a city, and one 2,000 Amos from the west of a city. And he could say as follows, if the sage is coming to the east, meaning there was a sage that was coming from a different place, and he was going to end up having his residence on Shabbos right out of the Tchum, and that's where he was going to have his drush, his lecture on Shabbos. So he says, then let my Erev that's on the east acquire for me my Shabbos residence in the east, and let that be considered my residence for that Shabbos. And then therefore I'll have from there another 2,000 Amos to go, I'll be able to get to where the lecture is on Shabbos. Now, but let they tell me that actually the sage ended up coming to the west of the city, then I want my Erev to acquire for me on the west of the city, that should be my Erev. And then the Gemara continues and says, let's say, Balakan Ulakan, which what that means to say is, let's say there were two sages coming. One was coming to the east, one was coming to the west. So he says, whichever one I will end up deciding, I'll choose that should be my Shabbos residence. Which, that's based on the halachic principle of Breira, that tomorrow I will select which one was my Erev today coming into Shabbos, because really the acquisition of the Erev happens at twilight, Friday night, when Shabbos is starting. That's what the Tanna Kamma holds. Now, Ayah taught that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the second halacha, that of the Seifa, which was taught about Balakan Ulakan. When there's two sages coming, one to the east of the city and one to the west of the city, and he can't make up his mind, and he says, okay, I'll make both, and I'll decide, and which one I'll decide will be retroactive. Ayah taught that Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Ein od demas nash ne devan. A person cannot stipulate regarding two different things, meaning regarding two sages, ke'echet as one. Ella, rather, the only time Rabbi Yehuda did agree is when there's one sage coming, and he doesn't know which direction, which side of the city is going to come, that's when he could stipulate. And then he could say, Im bachacham lemizrach, eruv lemizrach. If the sage is going to come to the east, then his eruv is to the east. Lemayriv, eruv lemayriv. If it's going to come to the west, then it's his eruv he put on the west that will be his eruv. Now, but ve'ilakan lakan loy. But that's what Yehuda says, but if you're talking about two different sages for two different sides, then you can't go ahead and make a stipulation that you'll decide which one will be Erev. That was what Ayah taught. Now, v'havinim, but we had asked on this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that how do we understand this? Ma'ishno lakan lakan deloy, why is it different when there's two Talmidei Chacham, two lecturers, that you say when it's, oh, for both sides, then you can't choose on Shabbos. Why? Because obviously, because they aim Breira. Because you can't retroactively clarify that when he ends up selecting tomorrow the east, that to say, oh, obviously it was his Erev, and that was his Shabbos residence retroactively. Because no, maybe by twilight, that was not his intention. And therefore, maybe his Erev was acquired in actually the west. And therefore, it's like as if he actually had his Shabbos residence in the west of the city. And therefore, that means to say from that Shavisa, that he has 2,000 Amos in every direction. It comes out that actually the end of his 2,000 Amos towards the east actually ends by his house. And actually, he can't even walk even one Amos, even one step from his house to the east, for sure not going all the way to the east, and to where that Erev is. So if that's the case, and that's what his halach is based on, when there's two Talmidei Chacham that you can't choose, so Mizrach Ma'ariv Nami. So how do we understand, even if he's stipulating regarding one sage, and he's stipulating regarding where that sage is going to come, there also you should say, Ein Breira. You should say you can't retroactively clarify that if the sage ends up coming to the east after Shabbos started, maybe when Shabbos started, this person who made the Erev, maybe his intention was actually to go to the west. And he's suspending his decision based on where the sage is going to end up being, because the sage actually could go on Shabbos. When Shabbos started, the sage wasn't there yet. He could go on Shabbos an area of 4,000 Amos. How is that? Isn't a person limited on Shabbos to 2,000 Amos? So the Gemara in Erev and Daf Mem Tesma Beis tells us, if let's say the sage is coming, and he sees it's getting dark, and he realizes Shabbos is about to start, he's going to be limited to 2,000 Amos, but he recognizes in the distance some tree or some fence, which is at the end of 2,000 Amos, he could say, I want my Shabbos residence to be at the root of that tree, and then he could go from where he is up until that root 2,000 Amos on Shabbos, and then from that root, another 2,000 Amos in a further direction. So here also you could say that this sage, at the time of acquiring the Eriv, he hadn't yet come to the east. And maybe the intention was go to the west. So we don't know. So we have to be dependent on retroactive clarification. So then why is it any different? Why two sages you don't do Breira and here you do? And the Amr Rabbi Yechon had said, explained, he says, you know what? Actually, the understanding of Rabbi Huda's opinion is, actually, Ukvar b'chacham. The halach of one sage is that the sage had already come before the Erev acquired on Friday evening. It's just that, so why is he saying that he'll see when Shabbos comes? Because he just doesn't know. He didn't get the news yet where he came. So Rabbi Yechon explains to Rabbi Huda that actually the one halacha Rabbi Huda agrees to, that it's going to work, is actually not working on the principle of Breira. Because all he's stipulating is, the side that the sage did come to, let my Erev acquire that one. So all we have to do is find out where he came, that he'll find out tomorrow. They'll say, oh, he came to the east. It comes out that it actually did acquire at the time of twilight in the eastern side. And therefore, that's why it's not difficult, because he actually does not hold the halacha Breira. And therefore, you're right, even by one sage, if he didn't come yet, it wouldn't work. This that he said by one sage, it does work. When he came already, and he doesn't have to make any decisions, not like two sages which you still have to make a decision. He came already, it's just he doesn't know, so he's saying that when he finds out, it's obviously the one that he knew about. But one thing you see from this halacha is obviously Rabbi Huda does not hold of the halacha Breira. As we see, that's why he disagrees clearly in the case of when there's two chachamim on Mekan Lakan, that it's not going to work. So again, if we're saying that he doesn't hold the Breira, so obviously this Rabbi Huda that they're all assuming is the halacha of Rav in our Mishnah cannot be the Rabbi Huda, the Mishnah Masechta Shabbos, because there it's fundamentally different. There before it was Muchen La'adam, now it's Muchen La'klavim. Over here, the animal that was slaughtered on Shabbos was Muchen La'adam, and it's still Muchen La'adam. And oh, you're going to tell me that, oh no, but then it was fit for having children, and now it's fit for only being eaten. That cannot be considered a fundamental difference of being Muktzah, because then how would he say that you slaughter on Yom Tov? You can't tell me that, oh, Yom Tov is different because then it's Huver was Lachila versus on Shabbos is Huver that was Legadl Vladim, because Rabbi Yehuda does not hold the Halacha Breira. So Elam Rav Yisrael, rather he gives a different source. Says Rabbi Yehuda de Kelami. This Rabbi Yehuda that we were assuming that he's the one that says in our Mishnah that although the Shechita was kosher by slaughtering on Shabbos and Kippurim, you still cannot eat it the whole day, is Rabbi Yehuda regarding the laws of vessels. It's not like learning a Mishnah Masechta the Shabbos. Mishnah says, Kol HaKelim HaNitalim HaShabbos, all vessels that could be moved on Shabbos, they're not Mukta. So Shevrei and Nitalim. Also, when they break, even if they broke on Shabbos, they could also be moved. They're not considered Mukta. Ubovat, meaning although it's a broken piece of something, it generally doesn't have any utility, and therefore it's considered set aside, and you can't move it on Shabbos. Here, the broken piece that could be moved. Ubovat, Sheyu'isin Me'im Malachav. But as long as it still has some semblance of ability to do work with it, that it still has a halacha of a kli of a vessel on it. In other words, even though it's not fit for its general utility, what it's for, but as long as you could use it in some element like covering something, then it's still going to be considered something not muktzah. As the Mishnah explains, shivri areva, let's say the broken pieces of a bowl, you could still use lechasven piyachavis to cover the opening of a barrel, so it's still considered a kli. Shiris chuchis, the broken parts of a glass. Lachas ben piyapach, you can still use it to cover the opening of a flask. So it's still not muktza. Rabbi Hudaimer, he disagrees with the Tanakam, and he says, Ubavachi oisin mein malach ton. The word's a little bit different. Not mein malacha, but mein malach ton. It has to be able to still have some semblance of, that you could do work with it, of what originally was that vessel. So, for example, shivri areva, the broken piece of a mixing bowl, is lotzik l'teichen mikhepe. You can't just use it to cover something. It has to be a semblance of what it originally was for. You have to be able to pour into it some thick dish, something like a doughy, like a porridgey type of a dish. So you're still using it for what it was originally for, although it's like just a broken shard. Shivri schuches, a broken piece of glass, is lotzik l'teichen shem. You have to be able to pour in it some oil where they would contain oil and glass. You have to be able to do it something of its original form. Says the Gemara, Me'em Malachtan in. So you see, according to Behuda, this broken piece will only be considered not mukta if it's somewhat relative to its original activity. Me'em Malachachar is light, but if it could only be used in some other context of work, then no, then actually it's considered mukta according to Behuda. So Alma, you see, Kimindali Itchen Me'et Malachach Malacha, although it could be used for something, but if it wasn't prepared from yesterday for this activity, then Asiri is considered forbidden, is considered mukta. So that says the Gemara, says Rav Yosef, Hachanam here also in the Halach of our Mishnah. Kimindali Itchen Me'et Mal, since it wasn't prepared from yesterday for eating, because it was alive, so Asura, so it's forbidden. That's a similar halacha of Hachana, of mukta, that we see that Rabbi Yehuda has that same opinion, that if something was not meant for this, and here wasn't meant for eating because it was alive yesterday, and only now it is, that that's considered mukta, and therefore you can't eat it the whole day of Shabbos. However, here too, Amalei Abai, he asks on them, he says, Midami, are these two halachas comparable? Hasam, they're in the Mishnah Masech, the Shabbos, Meikarikli. Originally, it's a vessel. Vahashta Sheverkli. Now, it's a broken part of a vessel. Vahavalei Noilid Vaaster. That's what's called Noilid. Something new is born. It's not the same thing. It's a different element. That's Kli, that's Sheverkli, and therefore Vaaster, that's why it's forbidden, and it has a halacha of Mukts on it. But Hacha, in the case of our Mishnah Meikara Uchla, originally, it is a food item. Because as we had mentioned Amad Aleph, obviously an animal when it's still alive is considered la'achila medis, that's designated for eating purposes, as we proved, because if it's only for having children, then Rabbi Yehuda, we said, how would he be able to slaughter animals on Yom Tov? So we proved that that must be that even according to Yehuda, that an animal is considered la'uchla even from before Yom Tov and before Shabbos. And when you slaughter on Shabbos, it's also a food item, where it's uchla de'ifrisu, it's all it is having broken off a piece of the original food item. I mean, slaughtering is like just breaking off a piece of a bread. Because you had the animal, even when it's alive, that's designated for eating. And when you slaughter it, it's like taking off a piece. And it's still a food item. And b'shaminan l'ler b'yehuda d'ama, and we know from elsewhere, b'yehuda says, uchla de'ifres shaper dami, that breaking off a piece of a bigger piece of something, where even if it changes form, is okay. It's not considered noil. It's not having created a new entity. Where do we find that? Now, like we learn in Mishnah Masechta Shabbos. Mishnah says, "Ein seichatin es aperis." One cannot squeeze out fruits lahitz mehen mashkin to excrete the liquid that's inside of it. Where schita, squeezing out, is a av malacha. It's a category of the 39 malachas where it's what's called mefarik. It's removing the liquid from the solid, which is a toilada. It's a derivative of dash, which is threshing, removing the kernel from the husk. So one cannot squeeze out fruits on Shabbos to remove the liquids. Now, if the juice came out by itself, asurin, it's still forbidden even though one didn't squeeze it himself. Now, the reason why what's called mashkin shazav, that the liquids just oozed out by itself, that's forbidden, the Gemara in the first sugi mesach des beid of Gimel Menalf explains, it's a gezeirah, it's a rabbinic decree, shemi yischit, that you, if you're going to be able to use the juice, you might actually come to squeeze the juice itself. So therefore it's forbidden. That's the Tanna Kama. Yehudah, he says, it depends. If these fruits were being designated, they were there to be eaten, and they weren't being prepared to be squeezed, so he says, so the juice that comes out actually is permitted to drink it on Shabbos. Because since the person doesn't really desire that, because it's, he had it there to eat those fruits, not to juice them, so we don't have to make a decree that, oh, if we're going to permit him to drink it today, he's going to come to squeeze it, because that's not what he has it for. He has it there to eat. So therefore, it's permitted. But if, let's say, those fruits were there to be juiced, since his intention was fulfilled when it comes out by itself, if we permit him to drink that juice that oozed out, so then we have to be concerned and make a rabbinic decree that he might come to actually squeeze it out himself, because that's what it's for, and therefore yitzim and asa. So therefore then the juice that comes out even by itself is forbidden to drink on Shabbos. But one thing we see is that the fact that what's called noilid, when, if let's say the fruit was there la'eichel, that although it changed form, before it was part of the fruit, like a salad, now it's a liquid, Yehuda did not say that that's a problem. And therefore he says, it's a mlechila oimedes. He says, you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos. So you see that even though something, as long as it was a food item and still a food item, even if it changed form, that he says that that's not a problem. So therefore, that's what the Gemara is saying, that Abai is asking him to give some interpretation. How could you say that that's the same source? Says Abai, they're different. Viru is a kli, now it's a sheva kli. Yeah, that's no, that's aser. But the halacha of a Mishnah, how could you say it's Rabbi Yehuda, where before it was a food item, now it's a food item? Why would it be aser? Because of mukta. So that answered the Gemara, but lavit ma'allah, didn't we learn regarding this halacha of that in Masech the Shabbos, that Amr Yehuda Mishmul, he said, Ma'idahay Rabbi Yehuda Chacham. Rabbi Yehuda agreed to the Chachamim, to the sages, Besali zeisim v'anavim, in baskets of olives and grapes, where there, even if it was being put away for consumption, for eating purposes, but since most people do squeeze olives to make oil and grapes to make juice and to make wine, so this person could also change his mind. And if we would permit him to drink the juice that oozed out, he might come to squeeze it out. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that even though it was la'achila medes, that the juice that comes out would be forbidden. So on that says the Gemara, Alma you see, kivin de l'schita kaimi, since regular grapes are meant, and even for people that want to eat it for eating, they're meant to be squeezed. So yohiv daitai, so the person does think about it and entertains the idea that maybe he's going to use it for the liquid. And therefore, when it is liquid, it is a fulfillment of his intention. And that's why we say that he's not allowed to drink the juice that comes out, because then he might come to squeeze it. because the case that they do disagree to be in the Chachamim is not by grapes and olives, but rather like by berries and by pomegranates. That's where it's not everyone that squeezes it out. But one thing says the Gemara is a hachinami. So then actually to the contrary, it says the Gemara, this point we could say is Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah. Because hachinami in our Mishnah, kiven de l'shchita kaima, since the animal is at least also designated for slaughtering, so yohiv daite, so he will think about and entertain that. In other words, that if it's going to be slaughtered, he's going to eat it. So since that is his intention, even if let's say he didn't think about it, we have to make a rabbinic decree that if we let him eat the meat that was slaughtered on Shabbos, he might actually come to slaughter on Shabbos. So in other words, the Gemara is changing, but still wants to maintain from that area that halacha, we should find the source of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim that something that a person would say, hey, maybe that's not a bad idea, even if he's not intending for that, like the Salam Azizim Anavim, that we say, no, you can't use it on Shabbos because then you might come to do it. So then actually that's the reason why if it's slaughtered on Shabbos, that even though there wasn't his intention before Shabbos, but hey, he's saying, if I could eat it, then he might actually come to slaughter on Shabbos. And that itself should be the reason. And that's the Rebbe Yehuda that says you can't eat on Shabbos. And that the Gemara responds, no. Midi hu taima. What's the whole thing that we're trying to answer over here? And find who's this Tanava Mishnah, that's Rabbi Yehuda, that we find elsewhere that he says the same idea. It's Elul Rav. We're coming to answer for Rav, because he's the one that said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, as the students were explaining, that this meat that was slaughtered on Shabbos is still going to be eaten, forbidden to be eaten on this whole Shabbos. So we're trying to find for Rav, says the Gemara, but Ha'amar Rav. Rav said, not like Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel. He said, Chalakai Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda did even disagree and said, it is permitted, a filibasali zesim anavim, that the juice that comes out is permitted even by the baskets of the grapes and the olives. So therefore, if that's the case here also, then why would it be forbidden on the day? If you're actually comparing them to the contrary, then it's actually difficult. Why would it be forbidden? It's seemingly the same case as the olives and the grapes, where that wasn't his main intention, but he would reconsider, and still you're allowed to go ahead and use it. So then therefore, here too, the meat should be permitted on the day of Shabbos. So Elam Rav Sheshes Bari David, he gives a third source, what is, not like Rababa, not like Rav Yisim, but a third source, who is this Rabbi Yehuda that we're saying he's the one that Rav was extrapolating halacha by Mishnah? It's Rabbi Yehuda de Neirasi. It's Rabbi Yehuda by the halacha of the candles, which is the Tanakh learned the Braisa. Metaltlin Ner Chadash, permitted to move a new candelabra, which was never used, or the Ner is actually the part, that cup that holds the fire and the wick and the oil. So a new candle that was never used before, where we're talking about like an earthenware Ner, which is new, and you could use it to put produce in it. So that could be moved on Shabbos, because it's not disgusted, yet it's brand new. And you could use it by just putting stuff inside of it. So you can move a new Ner. Aval lo yashin, but not an old earthenware Ner, because that's muktzah. Why is it muktzah? Why is it set aside? Because of what's called miyus. It's disgusting, because a person becomes disgusted from a used earthenware Ner, because it gets all dirty. That's the Rabbi Yehuda, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, where he says it's considered muktzah. So here too, by this animal, when Shabbos starts, this animal is also muktzah because of the prohibition of Avir Menachai, because the animal is not slaughtered from before Shabbos. So therefore, you see that this is Rabbi Yehuda, who he holds of the halachas of muktzah, when something is out of sight, out of mind, it's not something that you could use on Shabbos. Here also, Shabbos starts, it's out of sight, out of mind, this living animal, because of course I can't use it on Shabbos, because it's living. What am I going to do with it? I obviously can't eat it. So too, as you find by the candle, where it's disgusting, even if he finds a purpose to use it on Shabbos, consider muktzah. So that's Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah. And that asks the Gemara, Eimer d'shamet l'le Rabbi Yehuda, maybe where do you find Rabbi Yehuda saying something's considered muktzah? But muktzah machmas miyus, that's by something that's disgusting, it's repulsive, so a person totally puts it out of mind, and therefore on Shabbos you can't go and use it, because something has to be prepared in your mind, or in essence, coming into Shabbos. If not, it's not Shabbostic, it's not part of that prepared element of Shabbos, where it's only what's prepared before Shabbos considered something you can use on Shabbos, because it's disgusting. But muktzah machmas isra mishamali, do we find that he says it even regarding a prohibition that's regarding this thing, that even that he says if it's prohibited coming into Shabbos, that's going to be when it's, let's say, not prohibited on Shabbos, or you find something that you have before, that's considered muktzah? Says the Gemara, in yes, because it's none, which is actually a braisa. Rabbi Yehuda, he says, a continuing type of tezvav min alef, he says, kol nerisha mateches mataltan. He says, any candle of metal, you can move around, because metal does not become disgusting even when it's old, because, for example, copper and those things, you just clean it out. It doesn't have that same disgust as earthenware. But chutz from that ner should liku by ba'isa Shabbos. It says the Yehuda, besides the candle that was lit on that Shabbos, let's see the Friday night candles, where it was lit bein hashmashes by twilight, there is what's called muktza machmas iser. It was set aside because of the prohibition, because you obviously can't use it now because you can't handle those candles because you can't extinguish the candles on Shabbos. So therefore, it became even prohibited to move around. So once it becomes prohibited from utility on Bein HaShemashas and twilight, so that's halacha of Huxla Bein HaShemashas, Huxla L'chala Yom, so it becomes forbidden of Muktza the whole entire day. So you see, the reader holds even that there's a halacha of Muktza Machmas Isser, so that's the same thing as halacha in our Mishnah, that the live animal, of course, is Muktza for eating when Shabbos started, because there was an Isser of Eivim and Achai. So therefore, that should be Huda of our Mishnah. But on that, the Gemara refutes too because of a Dilma Shani Hasam. Now, maybe over there in this Braisa that you're bringing with the Behuda of the candle that was lit coming into Shabbos, the Hudachila Biyadayim. Because there he rejected it actively by his own self with his own hands where he went and he lit the candle. So then you're actively rejecting it because you're making it into a prohibited thing. Maybe that's where he's saying, he's obviously pushing it away because he's making it to muktza. That's maybe Rabbi Yehuda says it's going to be muktza and you can't use it the whole day. But by the animal where it's just rejected by itself, he didn't actively reject it just because it's a live animal. Maybe I would tell you that when it's slaughtered on Shabbos, it does come back and it is fit and Rabbi Yehuda would not hold that it's muktza. And therefore, we don't have a source for the halacha yet of our Mishnah that Rav is saying, which where the Gemara in the next Daf is going to explain where he infers it from the halacha of the Mishnah, but that even though it's kosher when it was slaughtered on Shabbos, you can't use it and eat it the whole Shabbos, that the students had said, that's Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Yehuda is it? We have not found yet a source that would prove exactly like the case of the Mishnah, that let's say as we had assumed up until now regarding the laws of Muktzah, to be the same exact case to say that, oh, since it wasn't fit before Shabbos, it'll be Muktzah and not useful on Shabbos. We didn't find yet the source, where it is that's Rabbi Yehuda who says this halacha.